Okay, we'll call the UCRA Reform Committee meeting to order at 1:04 PM. First, I'd ask for a motion to approve the January 5th minutes as we're...
I'll move them.
Do I have a second?
A second.
Any discussion or correction?
I'd like to just say, I know that it's an extraordinary burden really on staff to take these minutes. I want to acknowledge what a good job they've been doing because it really is capturing all the dialogue that's happening in the room, and that's a real challenge. So I think you've done a great job, and I want to express my appreciation for that. And I also think that these minutes, there are sections of them and comments by the committee members that really can translate right into what we want to say in the report. So you're really,
exactly.
You're advancing our work.
I have help with a software that helps me with the summary, so it's awesome.
Yeah. So, all in favor? Oh, yes. Yes.
Aye, but is there some, is it on online audio? We have any audio online? So that I can have the other board members listen to these minutes besides just reading them?
I could find out for you.
I've been asking every meeting, and I've been, I know you're away.
Yeah, it's on the SREP, but I don't know if you guys are, if you guys have capabilities for the SREP. The audio is always put up there. It's always in our SREP.
We'll have to find where it's hosted. I know,
So I can tell.
I know Jay was working on trying
to
resolve that. So,
yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so all in favor on approving the minutes? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I'm going to pass this around, and my apologies. There also is the December 7th one that each member is supposed to sign, just that they have done that. So if you could pass those around. moving on to our continued discussion, we left off with talking about the topic of diversion, and Comptroller Gallagher was kind enough to take and provide us a document that came from Europa McGovern, and it does not print well. You can look at it online, you can look at it on the screen, so we're going to present it on the screen here. I'm going to ask Comptroller Gallagher to kind of walk us through it, and we'll just continue our discussion on diversion. In terms of time frame, I'd like us to try to be moving toward this meeting and maybe the next to sort of wrap up the general topic of diversion, to move on to the other topics that we talked about, which was distribution and community. I forgot the title that we used. I can look it up. And then the financial, obviously. So given that we have 6 months, want to keep us moving, but this diversion has been a great topic, and I'm hoping we can use this to discuss, like from the supervisor standpoint, other items that can be diverted that are currently not being diverted, and put that out as a potential for future. Maybe some can, maybe some can't, but pizza boxes is one that comes to mind all the time, and there are agencies that are doing it, so with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Comptroller Gallagher, and I apologize, I'm going to move over to the side so I can watch the screen at the same time. So.
Great, thank you so much. Yeah, Manna?
Before we do that, is there a mechanism to get what you suggested about moving people into the report? Is there a mechanism to do that? Each time we meet, it's fresh in our mind, but if we wait till down the road, it won't be so much.
What do you think, Chair? I think that if we had individual members identify those sections that they think should be in the report by either highlighting either on a digital version or a paper version, then we could have a collection of those.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that was kind of my intention as we go through the period was toward the end, we would utilize the minutes, which are always at our disposal, to identify generalized topics. I mean, we still haven't really decided how the report will be put on paper, who will do that, whether we'll each take a section, whether one person or a group of people does it, or that's sort of a to be determined.
Might I suggest that we take the first four sets of minutes, and when we come to our next meeting, each of us come with a version of those minutes, highlighting those sections, not to discuss in the meeting, but at least to create a repository of those sections.
I'm fine
with that. Does that work for people?
Does that work for you, Amanda?
Yeah. Especially if we do it section by section,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and time-wise, that would work out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, I've been taking very detailed notes as topics are brought up, and then I always sort of figured we would refer back to the minutes for more detailed, and thank you for making them as detailed as they are, because
yeah.
I agree with you. The reports, I don't want to say it's going to write itself, but it in some ways it will, because the actual statements made in the meetings will become the basis for the report.
That's great. So maybe we could, when we send out the materials for the next meeting, put in a reminder to the committee members to bring highlighted copies or versions of the minutes
mm-hmm.
with highlights for those sections or comments they feel like are critical for the report.
Or even could highlight them electronically and just email them back
yeah.
to staff, who can then provide them all.
Yeah,
so.
I think that would be great.
Okay. Okay.
So just to give a little background on this, the last time we were here, we were talking about diversion. We were going through the matrix that Chair Baden had given us to work under, sort of that who, what, where, why, when. And when we got to the what section of diversion, we started to go through waste types, and we really felt like we were missing some of the conversation from the zero waste implementation plan. And as I think Legislator Green said, we're really just popcorning, meaning we were like,
if you click on view,
coming up with waste types that we knew were important to diversion, but what we decided we should do during that meeting.
I'm sorry. If you click on view up at the header, it's going to give you a zoom in. So click on the 100% and then take it to like 300% and it'll be a lot bigger.
It doesn't let me.
Really?
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So if you go to like the 200% up at the top.
So we tried at that meeting to just pull up on the screen the ZWIP and the Zero Waste Implementation Plan. And while that was helpful, I think this group, we decided that it made more sense to try to drill down to exactly what was in that, and former Legislator Petit was kind enough actually to send me the initial version of this, which she had in her files from her work on it, and then I reached out to Europa McGovern because the version I had wasn't editable, so she sent me a version that I could really chop apart. And Lizbeth, if you could click onto the second tab there, the all implementation steps, I just want people to see it who haven't seen it already.
Mm-hmm.
This is incredibly robust and detailed work. It speaks about, you know, who is responsible, what the action is, you know, whether it's ongoing, what the time frame is. And each waste type identified in the simplified list has these kinds of action steps behind it. And it really, I think, informs our work that so much has been done previously on this. So you can go back to the simplified list. I just wanted people to see that there is such an extensive list here. Now, the other thing I did when I was, and I don't want to take too much time here because just talking about what I did here, but I just, there are, you know, there are some things in here that are not diversion, like MSW is at the top of the list. That's municipal solid waste, C&D, construction and demolition is at the top of the list. But I left them in here because they were part of the conversations of the Zero Waste Implementation Plan. And the majority of the rest of the list is waste types that really are part of the what section of the diversion conversation.
I just want to say that C&D is a very important.
So there you go. So
and,
that's.
And do we need? Can you scroll all the way to the
top? Yeah, go to the top.
See, we're at line 15 there.
And this was sent out to the whole committee, so people can
right.
can look at it to the extent that they want to in the detail they want. And I think you heard, you know, with former Chair Bartels talking a little bit about some of the work on mattresses, like an extensive amount of work really has gone into many of these types of waste.
if I can add to that. So the importance of this activity, where it was a legislative initiative with support from county departments to step through that process, is trying to capture and think about what the whole entire waste stream is, which is why MSW and C&D and biosolids are kind of part of the total waste stream, and then identifying all of these, you know, small pieces, which are, there may be something that is very specific that needs to be done in order to effectively divert them, but looking at how that all kind of adds up, and, you know, when you look at the whole pie, thinking about how much you can divert in it. So that's why there, when you go into the SWIP, you actually look at what the total tonnage is for the year, and then what the what each one of these pieces is, you know, estimated to be,
right,
as far as the total, and how effectively we're currently diverting it, and, you know, what the potential is. So again, looking at, to the point of our discussion, how do you maximize diversion, minimize the amount of disposal?
So do we want to go through this list, which is waste material, but look at it specifically from diversion and go, what's the committee's thoughts? Do we want to go item by item and talk about if we think, you know, if we think we're doing it well, if we think something should be different? What's the general thought here?
I have some thoughts, just
please,
to throw them out there.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. That's why
in a lot of ways, you know, there are some of these where it's a technical problem, like mattresses, right? So that's just a matter of, look, do we have somebody who can accept these? Where do they go? You know, it's just a technical problem,
mm-hmm,
of recycling that. I think what we've been starting to unearth in here is that there's also places where we have kind of a system problem, or maybe, you know, and I think that as we kind of look at our name and, you know, that it's reform, that we should be looking for the places where our current system to do this doesn't serve actually doing the job. So I think that, you know, we might have to do both, but I think at the high level, this document does a really good job of looking at the kind of the technical issues, but then, you know, teasing out where there's these bigger issues that I think are where we should spend our time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was sort of thinking about, is we go through each of these from the standpoint of diversion, not from, like, MSW landfilled, we know the answer, but the, you know, can we divert anything from MSW? That's where I think we should be looking at this list, is of these items, what can be diverted? What are the, kind of what you presented earlier, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and I always forget what the T is for.
Threats.
Thank you. So looking at each of these items with that idea of identifying, and that's sort of what we were saying before, where this will help us to write our report, because we're identifying what is working, what isn't working, what we think we should be doing different. Yes, Manager.
I just want to say that from my perspective, the only thing that we shouldn't be focusing on for diversion is MSW. We have a whole topic coming up on disposal,
mm-hmm,
and that's a whole complicated, but I think for each of the other materials, where do we stand? What's the low-hanging fruit,
mm-hmm,
et cetera? But one way or another, I hope the report will address the materials and have recommendations.
Right. Well, that's what I'm trying to get us to. That. So, I, for the moment, then, yes.
I just had a clarifying question about the municipal solid waste. When it says landfilled, does that mean municipal solid waste that has been in a landfill for years and years, or are we talking about municipal solid waste being separated at transfer stations?
Not having written this report, I don't know the answer to that. It would sort of, I've read the report, but I don't remember what this was particularly called out for. Yeah.
I believe it was the
annual,
it was the annual intake of what gets landfilled.
That MSW gets shipped off.
So let's
ship off from the transfer station.
Right.
Thank you.
So it doesn't mean it can't be reduced.
Right. So let's for the moment then, let's take up this list. Let's skip the MSW, and I would agree with that statement 100%. So let's start with the C&D. So to use Deputy County Executive Laval's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of each category,
Well, one thing that might be helpful is just clicking in back into the implementation steps, because there's a lot of detail there on C&D. I mean, just a lot of discussion. You're going to have to, it's lines 9, 10, 11, 12. So if you scroll up to those.
Yeah, I think you're on 38.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And while you're looking, if I may, there was a time when C&D was separated at the transfer stations, and the haulers generally don't pick up C&D unless it's a construction project. And that changed over time, but I think in terms of low-hanging fruit, addressing C&D is...
I can tell you exactly why it changed. The state law for hauling it away requires it can be no greater than 50% in any one roll-off. As a town who used to separate, because we had compactors for MSW, we had roll-offs that were strictly C&D, and we no longer were allowed because the UCRA, under the state law for the hauling of it, the transport from... It requires a separate permit, and it also, the driver becomes responsible for those materials. This is how it was relayed to me anyway. So we were told we can no longer have a roll-off that has greater than 50% of C&D in it. So we now are commingling, and that is one of the reasons, but that's the state legislation that is the impediment. So I don't know, short of lobbying the state, to change it back. And that was all a reaction to the haulers that were not doing it properly, so they implemented new state laws about the transportation of C&D.
And I think it was an unintended consequence, because they tightened up the law because of all of the debris coming up from New York City and getting, you know, sold basically to properties where they're like, oh, it's clean fill. But unfortunately, it wasn't, as we found in Saugerties and in Rochester. So, I mean, we could potentially lobby. We could, you know, so that would be one of the cons. I mean, but the pros are is we do have a commercial hauler that does have a facility, I believe still in operation in Marlboro Milton. And we could also look at diverting unadulterated wood, which could be chipped up and used for mulch. So there's opportunities there, aside from trying to lobby the state, because that was really an unintended consequence, I think.
But that was in order to, for the UCRA to be compliant with the state laws, with the hauling of the material, they had to instruct all the transfer stations to not segregate it.
Mm-hmm. Or get a permit.
And the cost of getting the permit was significant for the UCRA. At least this is what the operations manager relayed to me, so.
I would request that we look into what the actual cost for a permit is and what it would take.
I think it was also liability, because the drivers themselves become liable for what they're hauling, and they're employees of the UCRA, and they have no oversight over what goes into those roll-offs. So I think that was part of the issue, too.
I don't want to take too much more time on this, but I think, you know, maybe a subcommittee to meet with the agency to find out what the obstacles actually are.
Or if Andrew can just try to find out and bring back an answer to us. I don't know if we need a subcommittee, but
I think we're going to have several questions that need to be brought back.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sticky one. It came up right away.
Yeah.
But it's there's also, if it's done right, it's a major form of waste diversion. Whether it should end up at the Reuse Innovation Center or whether ECRA should have a C&D processing, those are all questions that come out of it. So let's bookmark this to get back to it.
Yep. And that's from the original, the who, what, where. This is the where. Where do we do the C&D diversion? If it's done, the transfer station can do it, but then if the towns have to be responsible for then transferring it, that becomes an issue. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I spoke to Charlie about this, the operations director, and he's long maintained that there's simply at the current transfer station not a safe way to do this in a fast and efficient way because the when it was designed, those things are too small for modern operations. So it could be done at the RRA facilities, but if so, it would require a great deal of money to reinvest and sort of expand the size of the footprint.
Okay.
You said transfer stations, but then you said the RRA facilities, so I'm not...
Well, I meant the New Paltz transfer station, maybe, and also up in the town of Ulster.
Gotcha.
Well, not the municipal transfer station.
You dump it on the tipping floor, and there's just not room.
Gotcha.
Mm. Yeah, it's not a safe place to do it.
Yeah. Well, and it's also it is the hauling issue as well, though.
And once again, the towns only bring in 10%
right.
of everything,
right.
So you keep that in mind.
You know, I just yesterday got the report from the UCRA for the annual for all the municipalities. Is there a similar report that can be shared with this body of the amount of what's brought in from the private haulers and then the amount that's received separately that could be shared with us? Because obviously the municipalities,
I would think
that report
public,
is shared with
public,
us.
That's a public document.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you request that they provide that to us? Because maybe in seeing numbers, it's helpful.
Want me to just have them send it to you, and you can send it, or
send it through our.
Take a day or two because I have, you know.
Yeah, because we can put that in our shared drive, and it's just good to have. And I'll share the municipality one with you, the report that came.
Okay. Yeah, I'll add it to the one.
Yeah, because it is very helpful to see percentages. So.
So you want the end of the year, or you want everything? Do whatever.
The one for 2023, I think, and that's it's an apples to apples comparison because I have month to month. From the municipalities of what was received from each municipality, and if you can provide the balance of what was received, and however it's segregated, I don't know how you guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. The MSW, you don't want the recycling.
Both. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because you get do you get recycling from other sources other than just the municipalities too?
Not much.
I'd like the leachate too. We haven't gotten that in about 4 years.
The leachate is from the municipalities is listed, but not. If we can break down.
There just may not be end of 2023 yet.
It exists because I just got the municipality one.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
They track it on a month-by-month basis.
Yeah.
So. She just sent it to me because we're required by March 1st to do our annual recycling report back, and that information it just came in my email yesterday. So I'm sure if it was existing for that, it's existing for the others. Okay, so on C&D, are there any other things we want to discuss? Obviously, the hauling and the segregation is an issue, and where does it happen? Are there any other...
And where could it go? Because it's not regulated under flow control.
Right.
So it could go to a regional location if we...
Well, these five steps that are shown there are more, actually. So
yeah, there's more.
Yeah, so let's start with the first one, number item 9.
Okay.
So increase in track recovery, we kind of just talked about that one. Develop a C&D hierarchy to identify and adopt source reduction. At the time, that was the SWIP working group, but that's sort of now being moved over to us. So we need to try to, does this committee think it's, in the short amount of time, should we be trying to come up with ideas or just be identifying the problems? And I'm open to either way. I just, given the time, I just don't know how much solution we can do versus identification. Please.
This is all about solution. If we're not talking about solutions, we shouldn't even be at this table.
Okay.
But the solution that we're looking for is, are we structured the right way? Do
okay.
we have the right entities to solve the problem? Are the entities related to each other via contract or, you know, organizational chart in the right way to handle the problem? So it's more about, to my mind, about setting up a system that can address the problems that are identified.
Right.
So I agree with you, Mike, that we really are identifying problems. I think our next step is really saying, okay, now are we structured the right way? For me, when I look at this list of action items, you know, for this particular product, I don't think we're structured the right way. I don't think C&D is called out the way that it maybe could be in the contract between Ulster County and the agency. I get why the agency would feel basically allergic to this area because it is really expensive. They don't have the capacity to handle it, so in the way that we're set up right now. So when I look at this problem, I say to myself, I think this should be specifically articulated in the contract, what we want done with this. And it may be that there should be, I see, you know, on at line 12, the discussion about creating an ordinance, you know, that is the legislature adopting a local law, and that local law basically being implemented and enforced by UCRA, which they don't necessarily right now have the capacity to take on. That's the way it looks to me. I don't know if others feel that way about it, but I think the ordinance, you know, yes, the legislature should adopt an ordinance that implements the policy in some way, and the contract should be changed to modified to address it.
The other thing is that there is a very successful facility in Orange County. We
mm-hmm.
could make some kind of arrangement. We could see if they want to replicate something like that in Ulster County. But it's that an example of maximum diversion. And what's really important about the Taylor facility is that they handle sheetrock, and sheetrock causes odors in landfills. And if we're going to succeed in creating a little green landfill, a petite green landfill, we want to divert material that causes odors and a lot of other things. But I just want to mention that about an existing facility that could be replicated, or we could regionalize, but it can be done, is my point.
And as a follow-up to the point that Legislator Green just raised, one thing that I had suggested to the Energy and Environment Committee was that we schedule a field trip, more or less, to go visit the facility in Orange County, and I think that might be a really good thing for members of this committee to attend. And I would like to speak to Vicki and whoever else the powers may be to, you know, set that up, if that is something that the commission would be interested in pursuing.
Okay, so that covers, and what I'm doing is the ones that we're identifying here, I'm just highlighting them for right now, for lack of a better way, and I'm taking notes on each. So just to your point, Manager, all these points will be brought into the report. So then moving on to the next one, create deconstruction program allows for reuse of clean wood materials. There is no description or notes on that. Does anybody have any thoughts of if it's viable, if it's how it would be viable?
I mean, it's a program that it's going to require a lot of education, and
yeah, it ties directly to the next one, number 14, which is about education.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to.
If we had a facility and we had, you know, if we had a place to do this and we had a contract with UCRA to do it and we had a law to make it happen, then this would be happening.
Mm-hmm. That's also part of the RIC. feasibility study.
Then, so tying that with the education, is that something that, it would seem to me that that is a program that is would be sort of low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people involved who are very knowledgeable on this subject, who could potentially, between the UCRA, the legislature, and possibly private contract, could come up with an education for the large generators of C&D waste to, even if it was an ordinance required, just informational, but to get them on board, to identify cost savings for them, and as soon as you do that, I think you'll get a lot of generators on board if you're going to identify cost savings. So I think that's, to me, that particular item is a definitely a no-brainer, because it's so easy to accomplish without huge amounts of work.
Except,
yeah,
right now, what would you say to them? There's no place to do it.
Right.
You can't bring it to Orange County, right? So, you know, it's almost like it has to happen once these other things
Agreed.
Go into effect.
Agreed.
So I think if you look towards the column all the way on the right, you know, they're already starting to bend the activity as advocacy, outreach, et cetera. And kind of, again, like going through these, you know, there are some where, okay, that's education, that's operations, maybe that's local legislation, maybe that's advocacy at the state level, you know, but kind of as we go through them, thinking about them in those, in some kind of bucket. You know, so that when we, again, this is about like the types of recommendations that we'll be pulling into the reports, then there's ones that kind of get to the comptroller's comment about the bigger kind of systems before we get into what is an education program going to look like about this. That doesn't matter if we don't fix kind of the legislation and the operational problems. So just to kind of triage suggestions.
Yeah.
Under action type, are you saying that we should have several just very clear action types to put everything under instead of, I don't know how many are here, I don't know if there's 15 or if there's five.
And this
five.
Is also from the SWIP, which is kind of a slightly
Ooh.
Different, you know,
and it's
this,
4 years
this
old already.
SWIP.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's...
Yeah, maybe break that down into separate buckets too and have five instead of...
It was a bad 4 years. I just want to say that.
COVID.
Yeah,
COVID.
Yeah, so, you know, with all due respect to everybody at the table.
I see. Yeah.
So, I'm sorry I'm late, so I apologize in advance if this has already been said, but jumping in on this C&D conversation, I think that what the commissioner said and deputy executive just said is true, because my recollection of all the work on C&D is everything stems really from the legislation first, meaning regulating C&D as a required separated item. All the rest follows. The systems come into place. I mean, and one of the ways that the discussion happened at the time was it's contemplating the regulation with enough lead time to build the systems and provide the education. But because it can't go the other way, like if you start with the education without the and the other point being that it, for me in the DWIP, it was one of the things that was, I wouldn't call it low hanging fruit because it's hard, but was sort of almost a non-negotiable. It's something that really has to happen in terms of the whole system, and it's just. Taylor is a good place to look for a system that works, but there are systems all across the nation that work, and in whole systems, C&D is always pulled out because it's such a substantial part. And I don't know if this has also been mentioned, but at the local transfer stations for years, C&D was separated, but now it's all dumped together, which actually makes
It was, and actually we talked about that. So what's changed is the state law on the hauling of it now.
Mm-hmm.
The town transfer stations have been told by the UCRA that we cannot have roll-offs for greater than 50% of C&D because of the changes in the laws that came about because of the illegal hauling and dumping. It was, as legislator or former legislator Petit said, it was an unintended consequence of the law in that it has to, you need special permits now to haul C&D greater than 50%. It's not treated the same, so it's kind of the state law may have fixed the problems of the illegal dumping, but it tied the hands of the transfer stations. Because Rochester used to totally segregate it. I mean, I'm just using us as an example. And we got told flat out, we can't, because the RRA can't then haul our, because the material in there, the driver now becomes personally responsible on their license for hauling that material, of knowing the source of it, knowing the, knowing, you know, the items that are in there, and obviously when they're picking up a roll-off at a transfer station, they have no idea. So, and it's also a liability issue, I'm told. So.
Can I ask on that issue, and if it's already been discussed, you can just tell me it's already been discussed and I'll get the answer. But on that issue, I would suggest that we flag that issue and get backup, because so often I find we're told things,
right.
You know, like, oh, it's a liability, it's this, but, like, where's the there? I would like to know exactly what the liability is, what the responsibility is. Obviously, an agency like UCRA can get those permits if they that's the issue. So can we ask,
we did flag it and put it on our list to ask UCRA and ask Andrew to try to find out some of that information. But
that
when that law went into effect, and I want to say it was 2 years ago, we were all, as local transfer stations, told that you can no longer, your bins must be commingled MSW and C&D together. It can be all MSW, but it can't be greater than 50% of C&D. Can I just take 1 second, and I just want to ask the committee how they feel, and just because we're involving non-members in the discussion, which I'm fine with if everybody's okay. I know I've done it twice already, but if we want to continue, I just want to be sure everybody's okay. Okay, yep, thanks, Chris. Sorry.
I'm wondering if there'll be a timeline in the recommendations, so something like a local law that can be introduced right away versus the C&D recommendations. If we don't have a facility, then the timeline would be after a facility is built.
Right. It's all to be determined.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Tracy's point is very valid, that legislation, but if the facility is not sort of in the works at the same time, they've got to coincide, because if you create legislation and don't have the ability to deal with it, then it's pointless. And if the other way around, if you build a facility and there's no legislation.
And also with the diversion and deconstruction, I think that could be something, and I don't necessarily know if it would be a policy, but it's certainly something that we could start prior to finding a final resting place. It's more like reuses before recycling, you know, specifically if we're going to be moving forward with the RIC, you know, get the education out. Because there's a real interest in deconstructed materials, you know, doors and windows and any lumber, and because it's all very expensive. You could build a chicken coop out of all reused items. You know, it's a substantial financial impact, or it isn't a substantial financial impact. So these could all be sectioned out.
And there are municipalities that have already passed laws. My feeling is we should start with Ulster County. Ulster County pays for a lot of demolition. And I think that we can start initially by saying that they have to assess the potential for deconstruction. And if there is potential for deconstruction, then move in that direction. I'm going to pick on Golden Hill as an example, because I did mention it several times, and it didn't happen.
So when they tore down the jail, they didn't make these.
Mm-mm.
But legislation does exist, and I think
just like the attempt to achieve 70% renewables by 2030 is starting with the county. I think that we'll learn a lot and benefit a lot by legislation requiring the county or any subcontractor that's working for the county to do an analysis of how they could do deconstruction. And a lot of times what's said is, well, there's asbestos. Well, the asbestos has to be removed anyway. So, you know, sometimes the reasons not to do it don't pan out as far as I'm concerned. So that's just in terms of a possible recommendation.
Absolutely. And that 70% renewables, Manjo, by 2030, where did that originate from?
Do you think it's a topic altogether?
Okay. No, but I was curious where that originated, the 70%.
State law.
State law. Okay, thank you. Because I wasn't familiar with the source of that. And I remember the statement, but I didn't remember the source of it, so appreciate it.
Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act that
okay.
I believe our county executive was very instrumental in creating, helping to create.
Thank you very much. Okay, so... any more on C&D? If not, we can move back to the original, the other page, which was biosolids. I'm not sure where they are broken down. We'll find the...
It's number three. It's line three in this
okay.
implementation step.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate your familiarity. Oh, they're probably alphabetical in the first.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Secret.
Okay, so there's only one line item, send to a composting facility rather than the landfill. I think, thoughts on that?
I mean,
yes.
We're doing this. The agency's doing this. They're doing a good job. We've invested in this. I mean, they're generating compost. You know, it's not everything, right? It's not all biosolids. It might be nice to have more.
Solids aren't biosolids. What is sludge?
Sludge.
Yeah, it's that's not being that. That's a whole new beast. It's highly regulated.
They're not doing it.
No.
I think there was a landfill in Rockland. Wasn't there a facility in Rockland that took
bio?
Yeah.
Okay. And that Buffalo that we ship
well,
it to.
It's,
yeah.
It's the Rockland facility that
we can't do sludge.
Can't do sludge.
Yeah, Rockland.
We take it and we send it out.
Send it out.
Yeah.
There was.
It
originally
is
a plan to do a composting facility on the adjacent land, and if it was an in-vessel system designed
okay.
and permitted to include biosolids, but right now, one of the things I want to just follow up is that when we do the, if we're going to do a tour of Rockland, they do compost. Sewage sludge, and you know that might be something for us to explore
mm-hmm.
as well as.
Do they have a document on how on their?
Yeah.
They must have a document backing up how they do it, too.
And yes, and it's all the same, like same principles, right? And not in dissimilar kind of setup. So I know when the agency first went to start the commercial composting program, they had a consulting engineer come in and do a technical feasibility study. It might be something where we could suggest that there's a feasibility study for having that facility here so we can take care of our own stuff. Again, the I would expect that the product then also has to be kept separate. It's a different products stream, but if these folks have skills in making compost, it's really the same thing. You're adding wood chips. You need a bulking agent. You know, it's the same procedure, but just a different waste stream that you're processing.
Generally, those
in-vessel facilities with a biofilter.
There, yeah, it seems like...
I was just going to add real quickly that I used to run a landscaping company, and there's a product on the market. It's called Milorganite, and it is a fertilizer that is made from human waste that's created in Detroit. And it's a great fertilizer. You could buy it anywhere around here, any garden center. So that might be something that we could look into and perhaps also become a product that we can then sell. So that might be a way to get some more money coming into county coffers. And it's a great product, Milorganite. So.
What was the name of the product?
Milorganite.
Milorganite.
It's another thing that's great is that when you have to be careful using it because it's really potent and you can burn plants with it. But in addition to fertilizer, when you put it on your garden, it also repels deer and chipmunks and other critters. So it has a lot of interesting benefits that are really relevant for Ulster County.
Is it safe for food agricultural use?
You know, that's a good question. I only used it in...
that would be my question. Is it something that comes out of this stream, whether it could be,
But I'll have to go home and look at my bag and we'll organize and see what it says.
Okay. So then moving on, mattresses. We've talked kind of at length to we want to take time to talk more about mattresses. I think we, at previous meetings, have really talked a lot about it. Does anybody have any other new thoughts?
I want to suggest that mattresses is an ideal material to regionalize because Ulster County generates a lot, but it may not be economically and the reason that we're not doing much in that direction yet is that the closest facility is somewhere in New York City. I forget which borough.
Queens.
Long Island, I thought. Or maybe it was Queens, yeah.
And we explored the idea of doing mattresses and still exploring it, but there's a hesitation for exactly the reasons Legislator Green was saying. There's not enough of a volume to make it worthwhile for them to come and get them.
I'm still wondering, so on the Recycling Oversight Committee, we had a gentleman come from Connecticut who talked to us.
That's a good presentation.
But they got the state involved, and the state made it a law, much like used motor oil, tires. When a mattress is sold, there's a surcharge added onto it. And then when somebody purchases a new one, it essentially trade in the old one, not trade it in, but give it back. And the retailers, retailers become responsible, but the retailers all are coordinating with one or two vendors. Now, Connecticut is a much smaller state than New York. So it's working in Connecticut, and according to the gentleman who presented, there wasn't a lot of pushback because it was a nominal charge and it was just built into the cost of the mattress and it was sort of an expected thing. So, Tracy.
Yeah, it's working in California too, if I recall. It's one of the states that follows the same model as Connecticut. And so I did most of the research on the mattresses in the WIP, and the first takeaway is advocating at the state level for that model. What New York State was advocating was slightly different, but enough different that the whole industry was pushing back.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if statewide legislation passed, the infrastructure would be built up very quickly.
Yeah.
So the two modes of discussion we had on the ZWIP working group were a parallel path of pushing for the model state legislation, which is Connecticut, and looking toward local regionalization if there was a reasonable expectation that that was going to fail. I think we had a woman, Manna, you might remember her name, the woman who came up to speak with, I think you had recommended her, who runs a facility downstate somewhere. It's not the one in Queens, it's a different one.
And she ran through all her numbers and all the breakdown of how functionally the mattresses get repurposed and reused and recycled, depending on which parts. I would say it's moderately financially viable. Like, there are models where this system works, where the legislation isn't in place. The challenge, ironically, is similar to styrofoam. You know, it's that they're such bulky objects that having to store them for the length of time to get the numbers, unless you have a regional or local facility to be bringing them to right away, is what raises the level of challenge. But there's a lot of research on just the exact amount of these that are created in any given community, and somewhere in this report is the numbers by extension that would be created in Ulster County or are created on the regular. I do think that the state legislation is the strongest, and I would hope that the legislature would advocate to the state just as a starting point. Like, that's real low-hanging fruit. Like, advocate for that legislation, not the one that's sitting at the state right now.
And I think, too, that a lot of the retailers are national retailers. So if they're already doing it in Connecticut and California,
that's a good point.
They're not going to be reinventing the wheel. Now, yes, you're going to have smaller local furniture dealers who will have to figure out how to do it. But the big mattress stores that are all over the country, or at least all over the regional parts of this country, they figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
And there are some of them are already taking it back. Mm. I don't know what they're doing with them after that, but some of them are already taking it back. So I agree, it's very low hanging fruit, but I also think it's got to be at a statewide level, because just trying to do it countywide is going to be very difficult and very costly. I can think from Rochester, we probably collect about 150 mattresses a year, roughly. It's a little between 10 and 12 a month on average that we get. And we send them to the UCRA, and if every municipality is getting that many, but even still, that's not a lot. That's not a huge number. But then if you add in all the retailers, then the number's growing sizably. So, yeah.
I just wanted to clarify about my earlier point about Milorgan Knight. I just went online. It is safe to use on vegetables. And also, it is from Milwaukee and not Detroit. So sorry.
It's Milorganite?
M-I-L-O-R-G-A-N-I-T-E.
Yeah. Milorganite.
I looked it up.
I was close. I was one letter off. Not too bad.
I spelled it like two or three times.
Oh, I found it. It's a Home Depot.
Yes. There you go. Okay, mattresses. So next, the next item is under the bulky items, specifically rugs, and then upholstered furniture. So if we want to go down to it's line 7 on that. Oh yeah,
I got
there.
It.
You're perfect. Way ahead of me. Mm-hmm. So there's an asterisk there, and then there's nothing else. So, and there's nothing in any of the other columns. So. Anybody have any insight on this?
Under rugs.
I freely admit I do not. And
I do want to say that, if memory serves me, that was not an item recommended for the Reuse Innovation Center. And so when we're talking about diversion, we haven't decided whether we're going to adopt the recommendations from the Reuse Innovation Feasibility Study, but it felt like a missing when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were a lot of materials that could go to a Reuse Innovation Center. The model they have is a little different.
Well, rugs is sort of very generic, too. You've got the, sort of generic office carpeting, and then you've got the fine weaved rugs that there is a market for. Just go to any auctioneer, and they're selling them left and right. So there is a market for the finer end of it, but the more industrial end of it, certainly getting it out, it's similar to textiles. Getting it out of the waste stream is great, because I don't know how long it takes to compost. I don't know if anybody else has any idea. It takes a while, I would imagine.
It's
another one where what you just said with the market for, but you also, you have wool, so that's organic.
Yeah.
You know, that's compostable, and then you have nylon.
Right.
Right, so that's yeah. where you have to have recycling, so it depends on the material.
Yeah, or...
This could also go under the RIC, because in New Paltz we would go to the Rosendale Carpet Store and pick up all their remnants and pieces of linoleum, and it was really sought after. So it doesn't necessarily, again, have to be recycling. It could be at the reuse end. And so I don't know, maybe under action types, if you want to break it down into that. Into reuse, recycling, composting.
Well, so in the case like that, where it's still new, it's
yeah.
not used. Once
right.
it's used, I'm sure there's a whole host of reasons yeah. why somebody doesn't want to.
Can you imagine?
Deal
yeah.
with.
They
yeah.
do it in the South, and I thought they actually collected the dirt, that they could get the dirt out of the carpet and then separate the backing from the top. But I
don't remember the company, but there is a company for commercial carpet that takes it back and cleans it. It's large tiles of carpet. Mm-hmm. They take it back, they clean it, they provide the new, and then when it can't be cleaned anymore, since it's their material, they can actually recycle it. It's when it's all different kinds of carpet made of different materials that the recycling becomes difficult. I can find out who that was as a model of one.
Yeah.
And if I may just, I want to suggest that we start thinking of who might take responsibility for some of these materials. For example, Tracy already had a lot of knowledge on mattresses. Maybe somebody else wants to do carpets, in terms of, unless there's some other way to get this pulled together and written.
Yeah, no, I get it. I understand. As people want to feedback information, I think as long as we disseminate it all through our staff, so we're all getting the same information. I mean, if we want to, as we go through, somebody wants to volunteer, and thank Comptroller Gallagher for volunteering to sort of generate this list in the first place, but that's great. Or if we want to just sort of independently do it. I mean, the mattresses, I've done some research on that myself because of the, some of that information I already have in my computer. And, you know, obviously we're all going to gravitate to the ones we're more comfortable with, but...
And I think we need to be open to the idea that some of these are just not going to get the same kind of treatment. I mean, the word carpet, the word rug, they're not even in the zero waste implementation plan. There are no action items here, like, identified with it, and I think for all the reasons that we've talked about, it's a struggle. I'm not saying we don't reference it, but I think we have to accept that there are going to be some areas where we're not going to dive as deep, and that the next Upper Reform Committee meeting in 7 years from now, we'll be taking some of those on. I think if we had a system, if we had an RIC, if we had some of the systems in place that we are talking about now, and they had been working for a while, really difficult items like rugs and carpets could get a different treatment. We might see, like, oh, some of these carpets, some of these rugs being thrown away could be reused. They actually could be cleaned. They actually could be, you know, sold. So I think we have to be open to the idea that some of these areas are not
and
going to get the full treatment.
Yeah. Over time. So yeah,
but
Tracy, I'm sorry.
I think also, I mean, given our time constraints in terms of our charge, I think it's incumbent upon us to think a little bit bigger picture. If we get down into the weeds on each item, I just think we'll lose the forest for the trees. Proverbially, I do think it's about the system, like that is, and that then connects to recommendations related to the contract and the future of how all of this relates and works. But I think we have to really, I think we have to start bigger picture and then determine where we need to, where we, this group, needs to drill down. And it's the easiest to say, like, rugs are not going to make this tight in 4 months.
I think my concern is that now we're doing something that I think is very constructive, going through the ZWIP materials, but we paid $75,000 for the Reuse Innovation Feasibility Study, and even if it's just indicating that this material is further discussed in the feasibility study. It was said that the ZWIP and the RIC are not part of this process, but I think they sort of have to be part of this process. I'm not saying we need to go step by step, but if there is information, and maybe that'll be when somebody's writing up a given section, they check the reuse innovation and see what they said about
it. Well, I would agree. I mean, we all agree that diversion was one of the four main topics, and the reason we started with diversion is just that anything we can divert from the waste stream is that much less in the waste stream. So and that was one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons. So I would agree, and by taking this information that already exists and sort of fleshing it out, because our charge is to make a recommendation to the legislature. So by recommending these are the items, C and D, I think we said loud and clear, is an item that they should really be very focused on in terms of how to do that. I think, Comptroller Gallagher's point of rugs is a much lower list. It's much more specific. Mattresses is one that we think should be easy, so that's why we're suggesting it. So I think as we work through this, we don't have to spend a lot of time on each topic, but I think we should at least just say the name, and is this one of the top five or top ten or however we decide to word it.
I mean, as long as we're reviewing it, though, could we fill in under description, divert new to RIC and put it under a long-term plan?
I mean,
are you okay?
I'm fine with that. This is, again, you're giving me too much credit for this chart. This was made by the Department of the Environment.
No, I get it.
Yeah, not by me.
But you brought it to our committee, and I'm just giving you the credit for bringing it to
or
us.
If you forward me the editable copy, I'll make the changes.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I think
we actually all have the editable copy because it was shared with you in Excel version.
On the OneDrive.
I don't think I got it. Where is it?
I think it's on the OneDrive. I have it on the OneDrive.
It was
I
emailed.
Put it, in,
it was also emailed.
And
I
emailed it.
Okay.
So and you'll be backup. Able to, yeah.
Yeah, if you open up your email for this meeting, it was there.
I don't remember seeing anything about this. Anything on there. I was just looking for it, too.
I'll send it back.
So, okay, so then upholstered furniture. Any particular items to bring up, or do we just sort of classify that as the same as the rugs, that it, you know, it can be through the reuse center, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also a plethora of secondhand stores.
Yeah, reuse center, secondhand stores.
Yeah, which was
my favorite thing to look at on Reddit is video of people cleaning old rugs. I'm not even kidding you.
Right?
And people, the upholstered furniture, I think people are doing that. We don't, in the transfer station, we don't see a lot of upholstered furniture coming in. I don't know how it is in other communities. In our community, we don't.
Unfortunately, I see upholstered furniture on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Could we train some upholstery repair folks? Because there's a lot of furniture that gets thrown away that's really not.
Oh, yeah. People just don't want it. You did get it.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you.
And it's on the OneDrive.
Okay, so the next after the upholstered furniture is electronics.
March, I think she added the Laura P. for UC Lake email on that.
Oh.
Because it was sent to my county email.
She didn't get the meeting notice because it went to her county email.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I got
we'll,
it.
We'll get it.
I just forwarded it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to put your old one? I mean, you want me to put your personal one?
Electronics are being diverted quite well, I think.
They're mandated to be, yeah.
There are multiple opportunities, including. Yeah.
Is there any ways, any things we could be doing better?
Not everybody can get to Kingston. So that's a struggle,
yeah.
You know, sort of like the way that we have the DMV van going around. That would be great. But I really think it's imperative that this committee and this report highlight the things that are happening well. And this is one of those things.
Yeah.
So I really think that we should call that out here in our report.
Mm-hmm.
The agency is doing it. It is diverting a lot.
The transfer station.
We take them at our transfer station, and we have another vendor who picks them up. He doesn't charge us anything, so we don't charge people for dropping them off. And apparently he must be making money or he wouldn't be doing it. So he's taking them. It's working for us. If we had to send everybody to Kingston, it wouldn't be happening. So
we talked in last time in this meeting that somebody had done a pretty extensive review of transfer stations. It was
Penny Coleman.
Yeah. Do you want me to find that for you, too?
Yeah, could you see if she has a written document, a spreadsheet, a summary of some type?
Yeah. And the UCRA does keep a very good list of what transfer stations do what, because all that's required in our annual recycling report to both the UCRA and to the state. So.
Except, well, I think of it, Woodstock isn't listed. Woodstock and Sorority's work together, but... I was looking at the list and counting how many transfer stations and on the website. And minor little tweak to
we just yesterday in that same email got a request to update anything, and like I updated one thing in Rochester that we're doing that wasn't on the list, but other than that, so I didn't notice, but I'll look and see if Woodstock and Socrates were on the new list. So the location, obviously, of Kingston, and does the New Pulse one also take electronics or not?
New Pulse does.
Yeah.
And Sopus does, but they were told they couldn't charge for them, and then they have to pay the RRA to take them. So I think everybody does things a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody knows it, but it's kind of a commentary point. Like electronics is something where there's state regulation, there's EPR now, and then it builds a system from that helps make recycling into a market. Therefore, you have folks who are willing, the electronics are willing to come and get that and kind of use it. So again, there's different layers of legislation that also support that.
Andrew, do the commercial haulers ever bring in electronics separately, or is it just you mostly getting it from local transfer stations? And plus, I know you have your electronics days.
I personally don't see why anybody would go to the two main transfer stations for recycled. You should bring them to town. Somebody comes in, they were dropping them off, they were putting them outside. And the door, and I said, you know, somebody's going to trip on it. It's a good idea, but anyway, we stopped after the winter. But if somebody comes in, technically, they're supposed to pay $20 because they got to pay $20 to go over the scale for stuff. But it's something that we handle. But I would tell everybody to take it to the town transfer station.
Yeah, but I'm talking about electronics specifically, which are not part of the part of the recycling law, so
they keep them separate and they get rid of them. But
yeah.
If it comes in the MSW, packer truck dumps it. It's mixed.
Yeah,
that's why I keep saying that
Tracy's,
10% is the town.
Andrew, some of the people that have curbside collection, they have to get a permit to go to the transfer station, and that might be a deterrent because they're already paying for curbside collection, but a lot of the materials we're talking about right now should be brought to the transfer station, and incentivizing that is something we want to make.
That's up to each town. I know in Chatham, they don't charge you to bring in, you know, if you bring in tires there, they charge a couple of dollars a piece for the electronics, they don't charge you for, but he collects batteries and stuff. They don't charge for that.
But you still have to have a permit to go there. I know that.
No, you're not in Chatham.
Yeah, according to their website, you do.
Yeah, according to the website, yeah. They don't.
Well, Tracy.
I mean,
and it's also not consistent. I mean, the town I live in, there isn't. You can't bring electronics to the town that I live in. So, you know, last time I actually came up to Kingston with my electronics, just because of the timing in New Paltz, I wasn't sure if I was going to have to pay for a temporary permit to just drop off electronics, or if I could, so I just went to Kingston where they took it, where you all took it for free. But again, back to the idea of if there's electronics in the MSW that dumped on the floor from a hauler, it's a violation. And it's not a violation just of our laws. Actually, it's a violation of state laws. So it really needs to be. We're back to the idea of having to work through enforcement. And again, I'm casting no aspersions, but I think we see a theme here in terms of recognizing one recommendation being, and a strong one being, related to enforcement. Because what we've seen in the past, from those dating way back, both Laura and Nana, is that a little goes a long way, like even the threat of a ticket, but then one or two, the minute there's an understanding that things are actually going to be enforced, habits change, whether it's at the curbside or on the tipping room floor. I would venture to say that, you know, certain actors, whether they're bad or not, if they know they're not going to be called out, they're going to push that as far. And we've all heard the stories about certain providers commingling, that, you know, the curbside, you have a customer that's separating recycling and waste, and, you know, eyewitnesses saying they're going into one truck and we have to assume then being dumped on the floor together. So again, I think enforcement needs to be like one of our top recommendations, and that's not to say it's easy, but I do think if you start,
this is a tangent, but to follow up on your enforcement concerns, we're doing hopefully our ROC meeting on Monday, and we will be reviewing the source separation law specifically for that, because I heard you bring that up at our last meeting too. And the concern, not to put words in your mouth, is the fine. Is that where we think the lack of enforcement, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I actually have always marveled that the law from the date that it was drafted has substantial, and now I forget again, but whatever I said last meeting, it's multiple days
in jail for a single
violation, and it's a considerable amount of money, and that's the law as it was drafted all those years ago. The issue is, it isn't being enforced.
No.
So,
and we have a hearing examiner, you know.
Who does that law, what court is the law that would, because the law only can set the amount of what the fine and or imprisonment can be.
Mm-hmm.
A judge has to impose it. So which court would that go to? Does that go to Olson County Court?
We have the power to have an administrative law judge.
Okay.
I'm not positive about that.
Yeah. Because I know, like,
I don't think we ever
local municipalities, local laws are sent to the local justice court. So, and freely, we have issues in local courts of getting local justices to understand local laws, but yeah.
I just want to suggest to Laura, if the Recycling Oversight Committee is going to talk about this, it may very well be that the penalties are so high that no one wants to enforce it, and to just have that conversation. I mean, I'm not saying it should be watered down, but I do think that we see it in a number of areas. When the penalties are super high and people have discretion whether or not to prosecute, if they think the penalty's outsized to the violation, they just don't prosecute it.
It says up to.
Well, that's why I asked that question, because the penalties are oftentimes, it's the judge who imposes them. It's their discretion. It's almost always an up to. Or if it's not, the judge still has the discretion whether to impose that or not. So, Andrew, and then, I got multiple hands. So.
That's why last meeting I said, let's see if code enforcement or Board of Health can write a ticket. If someone litters in your town, the cop gives them a ticket. Any policeman in from state all the way down to, I don't know if it goes down as far as code enforcement, but down to municipal police officers are allowed to write tickets on it. They're allowed to do it.
Separation.
So, would it happen? No, it's like a barking dog. There's laws against it, but,
Right, except they would have to witness it, and that's the issue, is they're likely not going to witness it, whereas when it's being dumped on the tipping floor.
Yeah, but who do you give the ticket to?
The hauler.
The driver.
The hauler. The company.
I'm sure that, okay.
Yeah.
It's,
Tracy, and then
Just as a positive example, when we put in place the plastic bag, the Bring Your Own Bag Act, and Deputy Executive Laval can definitely speak to it, there was a period of time where we were allowing for it to be basically like a soft open, the idea that you're going to get a warning. I think it was actually even written so long ago now, but I feel like it was actually even written into the law, that sort of grace period. I recall, and I'm not going to name names, but there were some pretty prominent and flagrant violators that were pushing back on seemingly to me very ridiculous grounds, claiming that they fell into the exclusion but not yet providing the tax paperwork. And my conversations with the administration at the time were, having authored it, were really clear that you have to start issuing fines. This is just what's going to happen. And that is what happened. And there was a pretty swift and immediate turnaround in. And that happened in polystyrene foam as well. Polystyrene foam was even more pronounced. And again, the minute the fines were begun, it was clear that there was going to be follow through, there was a change of behavior. So I think it's about taking the first action and being willing to follow through, being willing to
Manna had her hand up first.
I believe that we need to, or the county exec needs to appoint a hearing officer. The agency can cite the violation, but it has to go somewhere, and I'm not sure who gets to do the appointing, but it is.
It's been done
in the composting law, and I think it should be consistent for all the violations. And I would like to make a request, and that is, before we finish this report in June, because it's going to be a very public report, that the agency change its emphasis from enforcing the flow control law to also enforcing recycling. And I get complaints all the time, and I'm in the process of asking the last person that complained that their hauler was taking the recyclables and mixing them, and it wasn't a separate compartment. And that person is actively in touch with the agency, but I would just as soon not include in the report as an obstacle that the agency is primarily enforcing flow control, but that it would, and then also to get a hearing officer, because it's our experience, and I think Laura will remember, takes very little enforcement, word gets out, and then people follow the law. but because of the lack of enforcement, it's really mm-hmm. gotten horrendous.
Yeah.
And so we have to work back to what works.
Okay, so March and then.
Just quickly wanted to say you guys are right. It's the fine shall not exceed $1,000 a day per violation and or up to 5 days imprisonment. And I believe that a hearing officer was funded by the legislature last year. So
mm-hmm.
when you get to the end of that March, that's $2,000. But the enforcement is I don't know what to say about enforcement because it's really what I would say is that before you start enforcing it, you will do the education for the research committee to do the education. But really start putting out a lot of press about it. And the first people, like I said last meeting, the first people you go after is all the public buildings, all the schools, all the town halls, all those people. When those people start knowing that it's important, the schools will, some schools will be terrific, some schools won't, you have to enforce it that way from the beginning. And see, you have to get, I think maybe, I don't know if you can do it legally, but get auditors, a couple of people go around each school and say, you know, you're doing it. Like the kids are doing great, but then the janitor is doing wrong. Oh, the janitor is doing great, but the hall is going wrong. You got to find out where it's being mixed. So you'd have to really do that. But once you let them know that you, like they say, you can enforce it, you're going to have it. But you need to really show them that it's got the weight of the county behind it.
And also, I see your hand, and I'm cutting in, but it's a direct response that you do a warning first.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You don't. Yeah. Unless you know somebody is repeatedly disobeying the law, violating, you give them an opportunity to give them an opportunity to let their customer know that they have to correct.
Tracy,
so two things. It can. I just reviewed it again. It can be. The enforcement can happen through a competent court or an independent administrative hearing officer. And the independent administrative hearing officer has been not only funded, but in place with a person for 2 years. So there's a person who's ready to hear, but who the last year was never called on once, sitting, waiting. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, again, you know, I think Legislator Green's point about a warning is great. Education is important, but this law has been in place for, what is it now, 30
since
years,
1992,
as written. There's a woeful lack of education on all fronts. People don't know exactly what they need to recycle or not, but using the example of like the big generators, like a school, as I think I said last week, in a school, unless they are hauling themselves, the person, the function of responsibility for the source separation is whoever they're contracting to haul. And so it's the hauler's responsibility to educate their clients. The minute that stuff shows up on the tipping room floor with regulated recyclables in it, that's where the warning has to go. The warning has to go to the hauler, to the hauling agency that brought it, and then they'll educate their customers saying, hey, you got to separate this because we just got a giant fine, and we got another one, and we got another one, and we got another one, and there's nowhere else to go with the waste. The solid waste has to go to the agency. So that's where the buck stops, really. I think education is great. I just think we're 30 years into this. Like, we got to start. Like, we got to start pushing it in terms of. And definitely a warning is fine. I mean, on a tipping room floor, you're going to have to say, next time, we're going to have to hit you with a ticket, you know?
Andrew, let me. Amanda was next here. So.
It's a chain, right? So you have to deal with each part of it, right? So do people actually care if their recycling bins are being properly used? Are they watching that? You know, how is the quality of the product that then is getting picked up? You know, is the hauler doing the right thing? Mm-hmm. So there are all steps to this, but, you know, I think about what in New York City having a restaurant grade published on the front door of a facility to say, you know, how is their operation? You can do something really similar as far as, you know, is that school, that institution, that large, are they managing their program to ensure the right kind of collection and, you know, that it's not commingled and it's not, it's not contaminated. But, you know, I think that's a very, very targeted, like, and different steps to that kind of education program that goes along with the enforcement, but somehow making it public, too.
Andrew, and then let's
okay,
move on.
Okay, I just want to ask, what do people think of what Ulster was talking about doing, which they didn't pass, about ripping cutting the bags open on a table when they come in from the Packers? I mean, did you read, it was in the paper. Did you guys read
about that?
Sarcasm.
What
was
saying
that? Town
Ulster. That was sarcasm. Yeah, that was.
Town Ulster they tabled the motion at the board meeting, from what I understand, but it was to take the stuff at the town transfer stations, take it and cut open the bags and see what's in it and see what's being mixed. I mean, you want, if you, that can be done too.
But by your own point, the transfer stations are less than 10%, so
yeah.
I go back to, it really is.
No, I'm talking about on the tipping room floor.
I understand, but the haulers ultimately, when there's documented cases of the haulers flat out dumping recycling into the MSW container, that's very different than somebody putting a single bottle or a couple bottles in their bag of garbage.
I'm talking about a Packer truck that backs up and dumps the whole truck and has bags in it. That's what their idea was. They put it off. But
when you're saying Ulster, what do you mean Ulster?
It was the town of Ulster transfer station.
They're not taking Packer trucks, though.
I understand that. I understand.
So
that.
I don't understand the point.
Enforcement.
I get it.
You want to enforce stuff that's in plastic that comes in the Packer trucks. So I'm not being difficult. I'm just asking a question. So you're going to cut open. How do you know that if everything is in bags, that it's being mixed?
Oh,
yeah. I understand. That's all. Just ask the question.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, and you're bringing up it's a very difficult thing to enforce, but you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
If you just ignore it because it's too difficult to do, and I don't mean you, just mean in general, the you. If it's just ignored, then it's a pointless law. So, with all that, we're at an hour and a half. We've tried to keep it an hour and a half. Do people want to keep going a little bit longer today? Do we still have to figure out our February meetings, which tends to take 10 minutes. So do we want to end it here, and we'll pick up with hazardous waste next time. So I'm going
to
mark that as where we left off.
Yeah, I have to go.
So in February, do we want to keep meeting twice every other week? Does that seem to be working for people? So if we can all try to find dates that work, that would be great.
Can I just add that Kyle Barnett is the hearing officer?
Yeah.
I want to put his name in. Kyle Barnett was the appointed
hearing
officer for this law.
Yeah.
22.
And Tracy said that when she was still in his chair that you had renewed the contract. Yeah. Twice. Good.
But he's never been called.
He's never had, no, because it's
never
been enforced.
Right, no, I'm not worried about that. It's more just that he's there.
He's
from the ECRI board.
It's been difficult.
Yeah.
You know, if you look back, I made the last executive director and make him. Encourage him to fire.
Well, he's had leadership.
No, she's supposed to come early. I don't know if she's here yet.
Okay, so for February, since we're meeting February 1st would be 2 weeks. Do we want to meet that first week? Do we want to meet the Friday the 2nd?
I got a doctor's appointment on the 1st.
Yeah, the 1st is difficult for me. The first Thursday of the month is not an easy day for me to meet. So would people want to meet on Friday?
Yeah.
The second?
What, what about the 31st?
I could do that. I just have to do it after lunch. I couldn't do a morning that because I have a doctor's appointment that morning. So.
So with one, is that too early for you?
One is fine. Yeah.
On Friday the
second. One on Friday the second, or one on the 31st. Tracy was asking about doing it on the 31st.
I could do either.
Okay. How about 1 o'clock then? Let's do it on the 31st. We'll stay on the Wednesday. So we're going to meet Wednesday at 1 p.m. Then 2 weeks after that, that would be Valentine's Day. I don't know that we want to meet on Thursday the 15th.
Bring chocolate?
Do we want to meet on the 14th? Doesn't matter to me. Okay. 15th?
Fine.
The day after? 1 p.m. again?
Yes. And may I also ask, we were talking about making the, whether or not the audio was available. I would just like to make a request to the clerk, to the chair and the clerk of the legislature, if the committee's open to it. I have no problem with the audio being available.
Oh, yeah, it should be. But we were just going to talk to Vicki about finding a spot on the legislature, because we are a legislative committee.
Yeah.
I think it should be on the legislature page.
I love for the board of UCRA and staff and whoever.
We just have to figure out the logistics.
Okay.
I don't think the question was whether are we going to or not. It was just how to make it available, that it would be available on the legislature's page. So just 1 second. So then if we meet on the 15th,
The 15th.
And then do we want the week of the 28th, or excuse me, the 26th, if we stay with every 2 weeks, do we want to meet on the, I can't make the 29th. I could do the 28th, or I could do the 1st of March. It's either a Wednesday or a Friday. Unfortunately, the 28th, I can't.
People have problems with Tuesday, the 27th?
If it's at 1 p.m., I could do it. I've got the Transportation Council meets at 10.
Are you going to Nice Sack? Is that here?
Yes.
No, that's at the Marble Town. But I would come straight from that to here. So if we meet at 1, I can make this work on that day.
You know, Nice Sack's legislative conference is that beginning of that week.
Oh, okay.
Oh, are you going to go to that? Are you going?
We should probably do it later. So when you say the beginning, through when? Through Tuesday?
The first 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday and Wednesday.
So then should we meet on the 1st, a Friday?
Which month?
March 1st.
Okay.
I was just trying to get our next,
yeah.
It turned into 3 meetings because it's essentially the way the month fell.
Can do if you guys can.
March 1st, 1 is that?
Yeah.
We'll also do that. So 1 p.m. for all 3 dates. So we're meeting on Wednesday, January 31st, Thursday, February 15th, and Friday, March 1st. And that'll get us through. And I apologize. You, I don't know your name. You had your hand up. Yes.
I'm Casey. Just curious, for someone who's not on the committee, if this material is public,
it was a public document at one time. Where it's housed, I don't know. I mean,
anything that's distributed in the committee
is it?
Certainly, it's not.
Who would they foil to the legislature?
Could you just send the links? Well, I think everything's in like a Google Doc OneDrive.
Yeah.
I can't even access it anymore.
Yeah.
No, but it was attached to the meeting notice, so we could forward the meeting notice.
Yeah, but does it have the link to?
Right, but so just for question, who would that go through? The legislative clerk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But may I?
Yeah, absolutely.
For a meeting, documents are discussed under the open meetings law.
Yeah.
The documents are supposed to be available minimally 24 hours in advance. This was obviously something that was discussed, and I was going to ask after the meeting for the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I would say if you just reach out to the legislature because, you know, I don't have control over the website as the chair, but the legislature does.
And that's where the others are standing there all dragged.
I will follow
these are official documents.
I don't...
I'll put it in it.
Yeah, all
right. We have it on the
website. Hang on. Tracy has her hand.
I just wanted to also add, because like Laura, I didn't get the... I mean, I had that document somewhere from ages ago, but I didn't get the current one, I don't think.
Yeah, we need to get make sure the emails are going to the...
I did one email from Jay about this meeting, but then I didn't get anything else. I just got the one email from Jay with the agenda. So if
we can work on.
Just make sure that.
Are you now our official clerk, or should I still?
I don't know yet.
Okay, so I'll
keep
going
still,
through Jay.
That's still a question. Yeah.
Okay.
Still a question.
So I'll Tracy, my apologies. Yeah. I'll get that straightened out with Jay.
What is the open meetings law? These are all draft documents because we don't want any of it out there as gospel. This is our vision, our dream. But
if we're discussing
materials that are discussed,
it's got
to
be available.
Scheduled to be discussed, including resolutions, et cetera.
So fingers crossed.
The only reason I was saying go through the legislative clerk is because I'm the chair of this committee, but the legislature is applying the staffing.
This is an easy get.
Absolutely. And it's not trying to, I just didn't know who to ask.
And I just, I wonder, you know, since Mr. Kemble is the reporter who has covered this issue the most, is there any reason why he can't be given the materials for the meeting on a regular basis?
No.
I could ask the clerk.
Yeah,
if you would ask the clerk, that would be really helpful.
I would defer to whatever
the clerk
says.
Then he'll look at our agenda and be like, I'm not going to that meeting. Or he'll be like, that's the one I want to be at.
That's the one.
The question I have is, if you want to foil something from the legislature, who's the foil clerk? Are you in town? Is it the town clerk?
The legislative clerk.
So that's who would, you know, because you don't have to make it.
And that's all, as I was saying, is ask her for it.
I don't
disagree that it should be public. I just didn't, you know, I didn't feel comfortable dispersing it because it's I'm serving on behalf of the legislature, so it's the clerk's.
I feel perfectly fine dispersing it. I'm serving on my own behalf.
You can.
Right now.
There you go.
Adjourning?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Do we have your email?
I'm going to give it now.
Okay.
Okay. Yep.
Second. Who motioned it?
I'll make it.
I thought Marge did.
Laura seconded it?
Fine. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
KCR@gmail.com.
I'm
sending it to both of you together.
Really
appreciate
it.
Yeah.
I have a question. Any one of the three of you are more qualified to answer the following question. As I listen to the session.